8. I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. For the creation waits in eager expectation for the children of God to be revealed. For the creation was subjected to frustration, not by its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be liberated from its bondage to decay and brought into the freedom and glory of the children of God. We know that the whole creation has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth right up to the present time. Doug Bradbury is a Geneva grad, has many years' experience in youth ministry and family ministry and outdoor ministry, loves to backpack and kayak and do all kinds of things, and he's a great person to have speak to us on creation care. Please welcome Doug Bradbury.
You ready for this? I think, you know, when you look at that passage up there in Romans, one of the ways that you might understand it better would be something like this, you know. Yeah? Because, let's face it, the creation is groaning, and you all know Disney. You don't know this passage, but you know Disney. You know, and what happened in that story, of course, was Simba, you know that guy, right? He didn't assume his title, and what was his title? He was the son of the king, okay, of Mufasa, okay? And so Mufasa, you know, was Mufasa the king? Yes. Who's the crazy monkey? Thank you. Okay, so, you see, we didn't even go over this, and you know this. That's the power of pop culture, study humanities. Okay, so, the point what I'm trying to make here is this. Because Simba did not assume his right, and instead what he did is I found this really cool little thing. It was like, Hakuna Matata, right? It was a wonderful place. And Hakuna Matata means what? No worries. I don't have to worry about anything. In fact, it's kind of like being a college student. I don't have to worry about anything, you know? Come in here, I got my green cup, I got green clothes, I got all this sort of thing. Is that really what college is all about? Be young, have fun, drink Pepsi. Right? And so what he did this Hakuna Matata thing, and he went over, you know, and met some other kids, and they started this little gang, okay, and they're eating slugs, and he was a tree hugger. He was a tree hugger, wasn't he? I mean, he was a vegetarian, you know, he was living out in the jungle, all this sort of thing. But what did he do? He did not assume his responsibility for the creation, for his kingdom. He did not step up and take responsibility for the thing because he was in line. And this is what we're reading about here right in Romans 8. That the creation is groaning. Waiting for what? For the sons and daughters of God to step up to bring redemption. It's wanting to be liberated. It's wanting to experience healing, hope, all those sorts of things. So how's that going for you? See, what we do is when we look at sort of creation care, automatically we think, oh, you know, we put in categories like liberal, conservative, you know? Oh, there's those liberal tree huggers. This is what's going on here. But see, here it is. We got to get past some of this rhetoric stuff. We got to get past some of these categories. You know, for about over 25 years, I've been taking people in the backcountry. I've taken over 5,000 people safely. And that's safely has quotes on it, you know. I didn't lose anybody, but, you know, there might have been some flesh wounds here and there. But you know, I've taken people in the backcountry, and one of the things I experienced is we do this thing called low-impact camping where, you know, leave no trace behind, you just leave footprints, and even that, don't do that, you know, just take pictures, you know, and all sort of stuff, right? And what I have found is that this is an unbelievable atmosphere, an unbelievable place, environment to actually teach people about God. Because we know earlier in Romans it says that God's invisible qualities, his eternal power is clearly seen through what has been made. And so when I take students out there with me out to Wyoming, like last spring, you know, we went to Wyoming and sometimes there is no snow. And so what we'll do is we'll look at flowers, and I'll say, hey, Jesus says, consider the flowers of the field. And so people will actually sit and begin to look at flowers, you know. And I say, all right, I want you to draw the flowers. And they spend about an hour drawing flowers and looking at the stamen and the leaves and stuff like this. And suddenly, when they look at the detail, the intricate aspects of this flower, they realize that what Jesus goes on to say, that don't worry about what you're going to eat or what you're going to drink. The pagans run after those things. But consider the flowers, because look, if this way how God cares about the flowers that are here today and thrown in the fire tomorrow, how much more will he care about you? And so we don't take time to consider those things. I want to talk to you this morning about what it means for you to be your Simba. I want to know what it means for you to have this wild love for God's creation. And I'm going to argue with you from the standpoint that it's your job. You got to do this. And here's the thing. It's your Christian responsibility. That if you want to check in one another in terms of your spirituality, and say, hey, how are you doing spiritually? How's your quiet time? And all those sorts of things. If that's your deal, fantastic. But what you really need to be doing is say, when you ask that question, say, hey, are you doing reducing, reusing, and recycling? Because that is also spiritual as well. That's what we're called to be about. So check in on those sorts of things as well. Hey, the creation is groaning. I want to throw a couple things at you here with regards to just some random statistics that you could pull off anywhere. Every second, 1.5 acres of rainforest is destroyed. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. How many acres is that? Come on, where are you engineering students at? See? Huh? 5.5 times 5. What's that? Seriously? We need some new entrance exams at this school. That's all I'm saying here. Acres of land every second. 1.5 acres of land there. Check this out. 70% of the rivers in China, 70% of the rivers in China are polluted. And the word for polluted there, what that literally means is that they're unfit for human contact. Not only drinking. 4.6 million people die each year from airborne carcinogens. In any given year, 50,000 species, that's plants or animals. Every given year, 50,000 species of plants and animals are lost. Americans dump 63,000 dump trucks worth of trash each day away. If you lined all those up, you'd be halfway to the moon in a year. 14 billion pounds of waste are dumped in the ocean. Now, see, here's the thing. We are so statistically numb, aren't we? It doesn't really matter. We hear those things and we think, well, you know, that's China. What do I got to worry about China? No, see, there's a global world we live in now. We realize there's a connection between all these things. And that's why they find PCPs that are in contaminants in terms of fertilizers in Indiana. They find these in penguin eggs down in Antarctica. There's a relationship to these things. And doing this type of stuff in the backcountry for years, I have these authentically non-believing tree huggers come up to me and say, hey, Doug, what? You're one of those Christians, aren't you? Yeah, I am. And the first thing I find I have to do is I start to have to ask forgiveness. Because here's the deal. Stewardship is our baby. It's us. Stewardship is not something that I need some radical saying, go and save the mountain. Stewardship is it's at the very core of what it means for us to be Christian, to be followers of Christ. Hey, here's this concern. Roger Gottlieb in 2005 did a study of the umbilical cord blood of infants. Of 10 randomly chosen newborns in the United States, he tested their blood for toxic chemicals. Get this, he found a total of 287 toxic chemicals, with the average of 200 toxic chemicals found in each newborn umbilical blood. Nearly three-quarters of the chemicals were known as carcinogens. The rest were identified as threatening to the nervous, endocrine, and immune systems. You know, in China, the rate of breast cancer is 1 out of every 40 women
has breast cancer. But then what happens when they bring those Chinese women to the United States and they live here, that breast cancer rate jumps up to our national standard, which is 1 out of every 7 women in the United States. Same sort of statistic is true for animals, animals that live outside, and versus when you bring them inside, the cancer rate of animals is similar to that of adults when they live indoors because of the chemicals, the toxins, and those sorts of things. This spring, there's a group of us going down to Haiti. The number one killer in Haiti is what? Of children. Diarrhea. Let me say that again. Diarrhea is the number one killer of children. How do you get diarrhea? You get it from bad water. Cholera is going all over the place. What's that from? Human waste being thrown into the waters. I hope this you realize that this stuff matters. You know that if every household in America replaced one light bulb with a fluorescent light bulb, it would be worth the equivalent of removing 1 million vehicles from the road in terms of its impact on the environment. Small little things can make a big impact. And the church, that's you and I, we need to be about this stuff. We need to be talking about it. So here's the deal. Let's zip on through here and give a reason why this is important, okay? All right. It starts at the very beginning. So Genesis, here it is. Genesis chapter 1, you guys know this, right? In the beginning, God created the earth and everything in it. He made it, and he said what? It is? Thank you very much. Fantastic. Okay, it's very good. And then he says this command, you know, and this is where we kind of got skewed, I think. You know, it says, hey, God blessed them, said to them, be fruitful, increase in number, fill the earth, subdue it, rule over the fish, you know. And so we're thinking, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I'm going to rule some stuff. I'm going to subdue some things. Well, interesting there, because the Hebrew word there really means, rule really means to put to my purposes, put to use for my purposes. So what God is saying in that very specific place is, hey, I've made all this stuff, and it is fantastic. It is good. Now, put this stuff to use for my purposes. And we see even more understanding of this later on in chapters 2. Chapter 2, when the Lord took man and put him in the garden and then Eden to work it and take care of it, to work it and take care of it. The very first context that God puts Adam and Eve is what? In the garden, to work it, you know? Can you imagine God there? You know, go ahead, get going, you know? Eve started like, work it, boy, work it, right? That's what he says, to work it. But what's the word work really mean there? Well, you know, it's this other interesting word, right? It really means this idea of to serve, to bring about sort of culture. The Hebrew word is abad, and the other, that's for work it, right? To serve, and shamar is also sort of to protect. That's where we get this idea of like the police. You know, you see on the shields there, it says, what's the prayer? They serve and protect. Our responsibility in creation is to develop this pregnant creation and to serve it in a way that it brings forth shalom, good stuff. Well, we see that God is committed to this stuff. He says it's good, and I give you good things to work with here. Continue to read on. You can read in what happens with God brings a flood because, you know, Adam and Eve decide to not work it according to God's plan. And so what we have there instead is God brings sort of like this purging of the earth. And then, and those of you who've had, you know, Old Testament Bible here, you know about the Noahic Covenant, right? And the Noahic Covenant is this promise, not just between God and humans, but God and creation, all living things. In fact, in that passage there in Genesis, it talks about how there's 8 different times where God says, look, my commitment is not just to human beings, but to all of creation. All right, so this is good stuff. Well, it gets a little better because then we look at Deuteronomy, and Deuteronomy has these various laws. You know, in Deuteronomy, one of the things we read about is the Sabbath, and the Sabbath is a time where you're supposed to do what? Rest. That we see that within the fabric of creation is this opportunity to rest. We find this rhythm. And the day that you rest, who's supposed to rest? Human beings, right? Who else? All your livestock, all your animals, because they need rest. And there's just like there's a Sabbath day, there's also a Sabbath year. And then that year, you're supposed to rest, your animals are supposed to rest, your slaves are supposed to rest. And guess who else rests? Or what else rests? The land. This is like agriculture 101. Your sixth year, great, grow all sorts of stuff. Seventh year, let the land grow fallow. Don't plant anything. Why? Because it needs to restore itself. And so within sort of like this rhythm, what we see is this relationship of God and His creation. Okay, where it's beginning to say, look, we need to develop this in a way that is about restoration, which is about growing and growth. Hey, this is one of my... You could understand through Scripture in these basic ways that God is committed to His creation. So much so, how much has He committed? Remember when Israel, when they're like disobedient, and they actually don't follow those laws. And Solomon comes along, and he goes on this unbelievable building campaign, you know, and starts to exploit slaves and build all sorts of buildings and stuff like this. And then his sons after him kind of screw things up. Well, what happens is they go off into Babylon. Babylon comes, you know, and they take them, and they go into exile. Well, here's this really interesting thing. God is so committed to this promise that He made to Noah in Chronicles. Check this out. I got my things here. So He goes, listen, Israel's carried off into Babylon, and He says he carried into Babylon the remnant who escaped from the sword, and they became his servants to him, his sons, until the kingdom of Persia came to power. The land enjoyed its Sabbath's rests. All the time of its desolation it rested until the 70 years were completed in the fulfillment of the word of the Lord spoken by Jeremiah. So here's this picture that God is so committed to His creation, to this promise, that He says, look, I'm going to put you off into Babylon. Why? Because you're not even going to let the land rest, and I'm going to allow the land to rest. And how long did it rest? The appropriate number of years that they should have been paying attention to it. Y'all, we have to start thinking about God's word and the implications of that. You know, when most Christians I know, when you start talking about environment, you know, you get all sorts of resistance on this. When you start talking about stewardship, let's do a little test here, okay? How many of you are like really fired up about taking trays away? You know what I'm saying? Yeah, fired up. I pay money. I want my tray, right? I mean, after all, I don't want to be getting up, getting more food, sitting down, get up, get more food. I mean, what? See, when we begin to talk about stewardship, being a steward, we start talking about being responsible, able to respond to some of the needs and the waste around us. Suddenly now we're like, no, now you're stepping on my world. And I think this kind of points us to where we're missing a few things here. Hey, if you don't understand about God's delight in His creation, check this out. I'm going to read it to you. This is Job. Anybody know Job or Job? How do you say it? Job. Okay, Job, this is 38. You know, God, Job had a rough patch, you know, and so God, he's going to question God. And God says, hey, I got some questions for you, just a couple here. And he says, he speaks out of the storm. Who is this that darkens my counsel with the words without knowledge? Brace yourself like a man, I'll question you. And then he says, where were you when you laid the earth's foundation? Tell me if you understand. Who marked off its dimensions? Surely you know. Who stretched a measuring line across it? And he starts asking these questions that clearly Job is not able to answer, you know. And then he starts talking about the dimensions of the earth, and then he goes into, this is, you know, chapter 39, you know. Do you know when the mountain goats give birth? Do you watch when the doe bears are fawn? Do you count the months till they bear? Who let the wild donkey go free? Who let the wild donkey go free? Maybe it was dogs. Who let the dogs out? Yeah, well, you know who, right? Who let him go free? Who let the wild donkey go free, right? God did. And so you see this intimacy between God and His creation. This unbelievable intimacy where He knows things that nobody else knows. Look at it goes on here. God is just kind of gushing over his creation. The wings of the ostrich flap joyfully, but they cannot compare with the pinions and feathers of the stork. She lays her eggs in the ground and lets them warm in the sand, unmindful that a foot may crush them, that some wild animal may trample them. She treats her young harshly as if they were not hers. She cares not that her labor was in vain, for God did not endow her with wisdom or give her a share of good sense. Yet when she spreads her feathers to run, she laughs at the horse and the rider. You ever run into those like wacko environmental people who like pick up a leaf and they're like, oh, check out this. This is amazing. Right? And you're like, come on, seriously. Right? Well, think about this. Look at the behemoth which I made along with you, and which feeds on grass like an ox. What strength he has in his loins. A behemoth, by the way, is like an elephant, okay? What power in his muscles and his belly. His tail sways like cedar, and sinews of his thighs are close-knit. Can you pull a leviathan with a fish hook or tie down his tongue with a rope? Yeah, I'm trying to sound like the crocodile hunter, if you haven't picked that up yet. I mean, he's talking about wrestling a crocodile here. Right? Now, I know a lot of you liked old Steve Irwin, you know what I'm saying? But didn't you think he was a little nuts? You know what I mean? Like, oh, unbelievable. I had actual contact with a viper. You know? Oh, that hurts really bad. Right? And he's bleeding. You're like, this is awesome. This guy's crazy, but this is awesome. Right? Hey, go read three chapters of Job and watch how awesome God is just delighting in his creation. He delights in his creation. He loves it. For what purpose? And what's the purpose of it? Well, this is something that we have to look at. He delights in it for just being. It doesn't have to have some sort of, you know, purpose in terms of creating a job. When you read through Job, he's just like, oh, this is amazing. And wait, you have to look at the stork and her pinions. Oh my gosh. You know, I think if God was teaching a biology class here, you would have left the class being like, Seriously, that's just crazy right there, all right? I don't have time to be thinking about creation like this. Hey, I think the reality is that as we look to ways in which we can be good stewards of the creation, there's some things that kind of stand in our way, all right? And I'm going to suggest a couple of those right now. Things that stay in our way from actually embracing the goodness of God's creation. Okay, one of the things is this. First thing is we're dualists. Dualism, that's right. It's a dirty word, right? You dirty dualist, right? Because what we tend to think about creation is, unless it has a use to get someone to heaven, you know, I know camps that say, oh, we want to get these kids to have a mountaintop experience. And so what they do, they send 250 kids, middle school kids, all the way to the top of this mountain. And in the process, they're like a herd of buffalo, and they're just ripping every sapling out of the way. And they do this so that you can get to the top, and you give the Jesus message, and kid has a kumbaya moment. And then suddenly what happens, and they go down. And meanwhile, the environmentalists are saying, why do they do this? There's such a disconnect between being a caretaker of the creation. Well, I think part of it is because we live in this dualistic idea that somehow all that matters to God is our hearts and our souls. And we don't realize maybe one of the ways that we could actually share the gospel is by caring for God's creation. You hear me? Care for his creation. Do evangelism by actually being a steward of God's earth. Colossians 1 says all things are created by God and for him, guess what? He's restoring all things to himself. Here's the other thing that stands in the way. Entitlement. If you look at Leviticus, okay, one of the things we read over and over again, God says, this is my land. This is my land. This is my world. We have four little kids, you know. We go out, pick up stuff. We live in the city. There's plenty of garbage all over the place. We get our bags. We go out there and we say, hey, what are we doing, Popeye? We're cleaning up God's living room. This is God's world. It's not yours to abuse and use. Entitlement. I pay this amount of money. I should be able to do this sort of thing. Entitlement. Nothing you have is yours. You need to step out of the way. The way in which we consume as an American culture creates all sorts of injustices around the world, and we don't have time to look into all those things right now, but I'm sure you'll have opportunity to hear some of those things later on. You know, the third thing is this, in terms of entitlement, is that we forget that these things belong to God, and if we had a proper perspective of that, I think we would have a better sense of what's really going on. You know, my family, my wife is first-generation Mexican, or American, from Mexico. Family grew up in Mexico. And so we go out to California, and my father-in-law, you know, he was illegal for a lot of years and so forth, and he says, "Hey, Doug, listen, you guys want to go out, have some coffee, you leave Bella with me, no problem." I was like, "Really, Papa, I could do this?" "Yeah, hey, what, you think I don't know how to take care of a kid? No problem." I'm like, "Okay, great, fantastic." So we go out to Starbucks, get a little FaceTime, you know. "How you doing?" "No, how you doing?" You know, this sort of thing. And then we come home, and as we pull up into the driveway, you know, I could hear my daughter scream. Scream, going crazy. Right outside, I'm like, "What is going on?" You know, and I go in there, I kick open the door, and there's my daughter. She has one, her diaper is one side is all undone, it's hanging down, and she just got mess just dripping all down, rolling down her legs. Yeah. And what do you think my father-in-law is doing? Hey, don't touch the TV. Hey. He's got like a little flat, a little towel. Hey, seriously, don't get the caca on everything, please. Hey. My daughter's screaming. She's been traumatized. She's in counseling right now for about 5 years. You know, all this stuff's going on. And he's doing all this stuff. And guess what? I walk in, and I'm just looking at him, saying, "What is your problem?" You know, and what I do? I reach down. I pick up my daughter. I got mess all over me. You know, it's now on my clothes, my thing. I just glare. Hey, what? I'm not going to mess that diaper there, man. Come on, that's your kid. See, that's the point. When you realize that this is God's world, what is it that allows me to step into hearing the cries and the groaning of my kid at that point? It's because she's mine. And I'm not afraid to get messy. And I'm not afraid to stop. And it's going to cost me something. It's cost me some clothing. It's going to cost me some stench. It's going to cost me from getting messed up. And here's the thing. If you want to be a steward of God's creation, it's going to cost you. But here's the great news. Our world is waiting to see some people of God who are willing to make some costs, to say, no, we got a better way of doing this thing. So look, here's the deal. We got to think differently about how we look at this creation. Paul Petzl, one of the fathers of mountaineering, he used to take students up, you know, and he would go up to the up in the National Forest, and he'd take with him a Constitution of the United States, and he would slap it down on a rock and say, "I want you to look out, and you see this beautiful land." And he said, "This is your land. This is your land. This is the Constitution of the United States of America that says this property belongs to you as a citizen. Now, care for your land." Well, we don't need a constitution to inform us of that, you see. This is, the earth is the Lord's. We read in Psalm 25, everything in it is the Lord's. So, delight in God's creation. Delight in all of it. Be like a child. See the snow as gifts from God. See the rain as opportunities to stick your tongue out. I mean, isn't that what it's all about in a certain level? Is see the wonder of His creation. See the wonders of His love through what has been made in His faithfulness. Step up to the plate. Be your steward. Because what we remember about Simba was this. Because he ran off and was Hakuna Matata in his life, the kingdom was almost destroyed. The animals were depleted. The water was not clean. And he had to come back and take his rightful position. God bless you and have a great week.